Sean, we're 3 days into the best time of the year, 12 games in. There's drama everywhere. I'm in New Jersey. You're in Las Vegas. We got games tonight. There's a lot going on here.
I win.
Listen, of course you win. There's no question about that.
Okay? Actually, I haven't won because I haven't even been on a table.
Then you've won.
I am a winner in Vegas.
Yeah, there's no question about it. You're too... See, here's the thing. This is what you got to tell people. You're too busy working. You're too busy covering the hockey going on and watching it because you have to talk about it here to even consider going to a table.
That is all true, Dan.
That's it. That's what it's got to be.
It's been a good trade-off because the hockey's been fantastic.
It has been. We both have games that we're going to be at tonight. We're recording this Thursday afternoon. I'll be at the Devils Rangers game 2 at Prudential Center. You'll be at the Vegas Golden Knights Winnipeg Jets game 2 at T-Mobile Arena. Bit of a surprise there in game 1 with the way the Jets played. The Jets scored. Before we get into further stuff, this is more of a big picture. I want you to explain, because you wrote about it, goal legs, Sean. What are goal legs?
See, the beauty of playoffs is you learn something new every day. So Winnipeg scored 2 goals in 62 seconds to take over that game 1. Kind of took Vegas right out of it early in the second period. Pierre-Luc Dubois set up the first goal with a beautiful pass from behind the net. They go, they sit down, they're all happy. Somebody else goes out, takes the faceoff, plays like a 30-second shift, and then bang, they're getting the tap on the shoulder to go back out. They go back out. Pierre-Luc Dubois gets a throwaway pass from Blake Wheeler just to alleviate the pressure, goes down, snipes a shot right into the far corner, 2 goals. I'm like, hey, are you surprised that, you know, Bones would tap you on the shoulder like that so fast after the last time you were out there, you didn't even get a breath? He's like, goal legs, man. You got to believe in the goal legs. He goes, we were feeling good. Bones knew it. He tapped us, and there you have it. So I had never heard that. I've heard coaches and Rick Bonus of the Winnipeg Jets, I asked him after the game. He subscribes to this. You know, guys are going good. They have the momentum. You want to get them back out on the ice as fast as you can. But I had never, ever heard of the mental state of goal legs. I need like lead legs.
I thought it was great. I love their story. Was great. The goal legs is just, it's just fun like that. Again, I've never heard it either. So we're 12 games into the playoffs and we've got a new saying, or at least a new slogan, or whatever you want to call it. Right. I mean, so that was very cool. Again, Vegas has to come back. They play tonight at T-Mobile Arena. Vegas has to come back. Jack Eichel has to come back and, you know, have a better game to everybody for the Vegas Golden Knights does, as in the series I'm covering with the New Jersey Devils. They have to find their game. They were nervous in game 1. There's no question about it. The Rangers played about as well as you can play defensively to shut down a speedy team as they did in game 1. So we'll see what happens. But you know who has goal legs, Sean? Roope Hintz has goal legs. The Dallas Stars have goal legs. So there was a lot going on Wednesday night. We've got 2 games in each of the series that were played Wednesday night. And the Dallas Stars, Roope Hintz, gets the hat trick. 7-3 win. Biggest story of that game, though, was Marc-Andre Fleury in net. And I got to tell you, I was not surprised in the least. I think we talked about it here, Sean, the idea that maybe the Wild would buck that trend and go with the rotation that they've gone with for a long time with Fleury and Gustafson. Now, it didn't work out in game 2, but I wasn't surprised at all to see Marc-Andre Fleury, even after Philip Gustafson made the 51 saves in the 3-2 overtime win in game 1.
I wasn't surprised either. I think that was their plan all along, and I think they were being a bit coy, as coaches tend to be in the playoffs. And 7 goals was not Marc-Andre's fault. The Minnesota Wild did not play well. There were a couple goals I think Marc-Andre would like to have back. But I think it's okay for Minnesota. I think they get out of Dallas with a split. As the visiting team, that's what you want. Dean's going to be asked about his goaltending for the next 2 days. He doesn't have to explain why his whole team stunk. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a lot of shelter for a lot of players who did not play well. So I think that's great. And I think he has his answer now. Gus is his goalie.
I don't know. I honestly understand that. And that is the general philosophy. And I would probably be bucking the trend here to even think otherwise. But again, they have used this rotation and they've used it for a long time. So we weren't surprised to see Marc-Andre Fleury in game 2. And look, Seven goals. Fleury called it an embarrassing performance for himself. But of course, Dean Evason wouldn't let him fall on the sword and put it on everybody else. And Fleury put it on himself. That's the way these things go. He needed to be better. The Wild absolutely were not good enough in front of him, but the Stars were really good. Like, they deserve credit too for the way they played in game two. So we know that Gustafsson is going to be going. I don't even think you need to ask the question, right? Gustafsson's going to be going in game three. But what if it's like, and we'll see what happens, but Sean, what if the Wild win that game 3-5-4 and Gustafsson plays okay, but he gives up four and they managed to get a win. And now he's got two wins in the series, but yeah, he was okay. I wouldn't be shocked if they went back to Marc-Andre for game four. It wouldn't surprise me in the least. They have a 2-1 lead in the series, and if that's the case, and they want both goalies involved. They feel as though that's how they've been at their best all season long when both goalies are involved. Odds are he's going to say Gustafsson is his guy now, right? And if he wins game three, certainly he's his guy. But I wouldn't be shocked if they went back to Fleury for game four, unless Gustafsson has just an all-world performance and you have no choice, he's your guy. But this is the way they've gone for a while here. They didn't go back to Gustafsson after some great starts in the regular season. They alternated it. They went back to Fleury.
Yeah, well, that's the regular season. You have some runway, especially once they were playing well and they knew they were going to be in the playoffs. Let's keep guys fresh. I just think, you know, you look at game one, Gustafsson, and how do you not sign up for that, right? Unless he's really poor in game three, and then you have a hugely different problem. But you gave, look, this has been a problem for the Wild for 2 years now, ever since they traded for Marc-Andre. He's a Hall of Fame goaltender. He's great in the room. He's done well for them. It's caused problems, right? Caused problems last year. They couldn't figure out a goaltender. It ripped the goaltending room apart. There was a huge storyline on why they were eliminated. And now they have it again. Gustafsson has been the second best goalie in the league behind Linus Ullmark. Do you think Montgomery's thinking about alternating his goalies? They alternated. Swayman played a ton.
Yeah, no, you're right.
He played 35 games at least, if not more. You know, he was an option any given night. They felt comfortable with either goalie. But I don't think Montgomery's sitting there and saying, you know what, we lost 6-3 last night.
Right.
My goalie, no good. Let's go to Swayman. That's going to work. No, he knows who his goalie is. And now it's the playoffs. And now, unless your goalie hits a rough patch, he's your guy.
Fine, but they've created this then. So,
well, I know, and that's right? The problem, right? And it's, yeah, Marc-Andre Fleury. And how do you do that to Marc-Andre Fleury? And it's a huge problem. It's, you know, he's a popular guy. The guys in the room love him. They love him that much. They should play better in front of him. But it's a huge problem now because you have to answer for it every game. As soon as something goes wrong, well, is Marc-Andre Fleury coming back? Oh, are you going to put Gust back in? What are you going to do with your goaltending? It's a question that's not being asked in 14 other locker rooms. There might be one or two where it's still being asked. I think Paul Maurice is still getting it, even though Alex Lyon's been fantastic. But, you know, they're going to go to Bob at some point. He's probably their guy. There's a lot of rooms this isn't being asked in, and there's enough problems in the playoffs trying to figure out what you're doing without having to figure out your goaltending every night.
All right, you brought it up. Let's go there. Let's go to Alex Lyon, right? Because you're right. He's getting that question, Paul Maurice, right? But Alex Lyon keeps delivering. Alex Lyon let in a bad goal. He let in a bad goal in game one. He did. That was obvious. Ilya Sorokin let in a bad goal last night, too. It's a Jacob Slavin that tied the game in the third period. There was no questions about Ilya Sorokin, right? Alex Lyon, I understand. There's questions. Got it. Bobrovsky's a million, multi-million dollar goalie, $10 million goalie, all that stuff. But I loved, as much as I wasn't surprised by Dean Evason and the Wild coaching staff's decision to go to Fleury, and I wouldn't be shocked if we see him again in the series, I loved the decision from Paul Maurice to go back to Alex Lyon. And to be honest with you, I'm sitting there yesterday, I'm listening to some talk, you know, some radio, I'm watching some stuff, reading some stuff, and I'm like, this is even a question now to go to Bobrovsky? Alex Lyon got you here. He took over as the number one. He got you here. He didn't play poorly in game one. He let in a bad goal. I love the decision to go back to him, and he delivered 34 saves, 6-3 win. This is Alex Lyon's series, if you ask me.
It has to be Alex Lyon's series. He's running hot. Bob has always been a question mark. Is he their number one? Is he the guy? You know, how much of an albatross is that contract going to be going forward? Sometimes you capture magic in a bottle, right? And lightning in a bottle, to use a pun that Florida fans probably don't want to hear. But I think you ride this as long as you can. And you have put yourself in a tough position where now, if you have to go back to Bobrovsky, he has been idle for a long time. And that's hard to do. It's really hard for a number one to do who's used to playing every second day. Look, you're going to give up goals to the Boston Bruins. He hasn't given up a lot, and he's given up one bad goal. But so have a lot of other goaltenders. Gurgiev gave up a goal last night or two nights ago to Seattle that I don't know that many beer league goalies will give up. He fell over.
Yeah.
He's trying to move and he fell over. Like, fell it down. Happens. So goalies give up bad goals. And I've liked what Alex Lyon has done, right? Like, the well could have been flooded at that point. You give up a bad goal, you look across and you're like, oh my God, Pastrnak, Marchand, all of these guys. Like, what am I going to do? I just gave up a horrible goal. Now all is lost. And he didn't. He's a kid who's played a lot of hockey to get to where he is, and I think he appreciates it, and I think he's grown mentally into it, right? You spend that long chasing your dream, riding buses all over the place, getting kicked in the teeth all the time, like, oh, here's my chance, no it's not, here's my chance, no it's not, go back and ride the bus to Springfield, right? Like, not picking on Springfield, but you know, go and ride the bus here, go and ride the bus there. A bad goal doesn't ruin you. You've suffered. You're not going to look, if you work that long to get to where you are, and then all of a sudden you let up a bad goal and you let that define you, you're not who you think you are.
Yeah. Look, that guy went into TD Garden against the historically good Boston Bruins and gave up 6 goals in 2 games. He made 34 saves in a playoff win in game 2. Kept his team in game 1. They fought, right? This is his series. He deserves it. He's playing well. There's no question about it. But the other thing, too, here, a couple of factors. Look, I think the Bruins win this series. I think it's going to be harder on Boston than they thought it would be. And we talked to Paul Maurice, remember, a couple of weeks ago, and he talked about how this Panthers team needs to go through the hard hockey, right? Well, they're going through it right now, and they're acquitting themselves quite well. I'm watching that game Wednesday night, and I'm saying to myself, even at 3-2 Florida, right, I'm saying to myself, Boston wins this 5-3. They come back, tie it, go up 4-3, get an empty net goal. Boston wins it 5-3. Florida played really well in Boston. Doesn't matter. They're down 0-2. They come out, the Panthers, and they dominate the third period in game 2 at TD Garden, a place where the Bruins had lost 4 times in regulation all year against the team that had allowed 59 goals in the third period all season. They scored 4. And that, to me, whether they win the series or not, and I don't think they do, I think the Bruins will go to Florida, whether it's a split or win both, they'll be fine. They'll win in 6. Let's give them 6, right? When many I thought would be 5 or even a sweep. So it's a little hard. But the Panthers are doing themselves a favor here by they're doing themselves right here by playing this exactly the type of hockey that Paul Maurice talked to us about how this team needed to play. They're going up against a historically good team, but they're going to be better for this. Now, what they look like next year going forward after that, we'll see. But there's no question that guys like Barkov and Ekblad and Verhaeghe and a number of these players are going to be way better off because they're playing in this series against this particular team, Tkachuk, and having to play this style.
Didn't we say this last year about Tampa Bay, about them playing Tampa Bay?
Yeah, but they didn't play like this against Tampa Bay.
They should have learned their lesson. I'm not buying lesson learning at this point for the Florida Panthers. They're a team that should have learned their lessons long ago.
Maybe they didn't. That's why they're playing like this.
To say that they're going to be better off for this is folly, I think.
They're not good enough to win the Stanley Cup, I don't think. Okay? That's my point. They're not good enough to beat the Bruins in a 7-game series. They weren't close to the Lightning the way they played last year. this is going to be a first. Look, we don't know. I'm predicting, right, that this looks like this is going to be a first round exit for them. But they're going to be a team that's way more equipped to do what they need to do. And that, I think, is that's what Paul Maurice was talking about.
Let me tell you this. Go back and listen to that Paul Maurice interview. First of all, the Florida Panthers have lost, what, twice since we did it?
Yeah. But he also said Bobrovsky was going to play like every game. So,
yeah. Well, and then Bob got sick. And then
right.
you go with who's hot. But there's two people he talked about in that podcast that really opened my eyes. One was Matthew Tkachuk, and we all know how good he was. But he talked about some of the other things he brings. And I think you've seen that in this series. He's dragged them into the fight. He's shown no deference to the Boston Bruins and to who they are. The other one was Montour.
Yeah.
And he raved about Montour and who he was and how he played and how he was almost a rover type defenseman, putting him in kind of that class of Burns and Carlson, and the fact that you never know where he's going to be on the ice and he can do whatever he wants. And he gave the Bruins fits. But the thing we haven't even mentioned, because the Bruins are so good, is they're playing without their best player.
Yeah.
And everybody's just like, oh, well, he may not play in this series. We went from, oh, Patrice Bergeron, we're going to keep him out for maintenance. This is a precautionary thing. We don't want to play him because he's a little banged up to today. He may not travel to Florida. We might not see him in this series. How many teams in the NHL do you lose your number one center and you don't start pulling every alarm bell you can find? Like, this would be a travesty in any other city.
Do you think they're starting to pull a little bit of the alarm bells now?
They should.
Yeah. They got lost defensively last night against the Panthers. They lost their way. They lost their structure. They did. It wasn't good. Like, they didn't play well in the first two periods of that game, but they were okay. But then you saw it. They lost their way, and the Panthers were able to take advantage. The guy who keeps them together is Bergeron. And he hasn't played, and you're right. Now he may not travel either. And it's weird. It went from maintenance to illness to an upper body injury. So what's up? Well, I mean, look, I understand it's the playoffs, but like, you know, and they're not going to give away information. But like, that was that's a strange one for me. That goes from the, like, how that kind of went. And we know, like, Jim Montgomery was talking about that is, you know, bug or going through their room at the wrong time and whatnot. But now it's like illness. So upper body injury, and he may not travel. And I don't know, but I think that they're not going to panic. They're still a veteran enough team. They understand what's going on and whatnot, but they lost their way in game two. And Bergeron's the one that keeps them on track a lot of the time. So without him, it's going to be that much harder, especially with the way the Florida Panthers are playing. And the Panthers, like you said, and I 100% agree with you. Matthew Tkachuk has shown no deference to the only thing he said about the Bruins is the Panthers are going to have to play almost a perfect game against this team to win one game. They didn't play perfect in game two, but they were really, really good. And you know, nobody's ever going to play perfect. They were really good. Can they bottle that up and bring it home? Or are the Bruins going to be like, all right, we're a little bit, if Bergeron's out, we're better off. We're better now. We understand how to play without him. We'll be fine.
Well, I think the Bruins are going to be fine. You know, it's funny. I was talking to Bruce Cassidy, the ex-Bruins coach, who's now the coach here in Vegas, and he was talking about, you know, what happens after game one and how they're a veteran team. And, you know, he talked about the honesty that they have in their room, and that the veteran guys are going to come together and they're going to be honest, but they're going to be positive. And he said, you know, you have a really good room when you look at your team and you don't lose for extended periods, that there's this self-correction that happens within the room. Right. And that was Vegas this year. And that's why he's confident that they're going to be better in game two. That was Boston this year. Right. They anytime they hit a skid, they didn't let it linger. And I do think Patrice Bergeron's a huge part of that. And the thing that concerns me about Patrice Bergeron, I've seen that guy play with a collapsed lung.
Yeah.
With injuries that would put other people in the hospital. And now he might not play in the series. Like, we're not talking about a minor thing. Like, this is a guy with an incredible will to play and an incredible tolerance to suffer. If this was a minor thing, Patrice Bergeron would be like, I'm going to play. It's better for me to play 80% than it is for me to sit and wait to be 100%. This is not an injury where you're like, And tomorrow it'll be better. If it was going to be better tomorrow, he'd be playing tomorrow.
Fair. I mean, we don't know, but it's certainly a big time storyline to follow in that series as it shifts to Florida. All right, it took this long. Let's get to Edmonton, LA. We haven't done that one yet, right? Connor McDavid, man, I thought he was going to be held off the score sheet the whole series, right? No, I'm just kidding, right? He gets held off the score sheet in game one. Still played a good game. He drew a couple of penalties. But look, the Oilers have blown some leads here, right? I mean, they blew a 2-0 lead in game one. They blew another 2-goal lead in game two. Maybe a little concerning that they're doing this, or is it just, you know, we it's early and the Kings are good? Like, I'm not concerned about the Edmonton Oilers, to be honest with you. I think this was going to – I thought this would be a tough series for them, but I think they can win it, and I did pick them to win it. But they're building leads, and that's where you're good in that department. You're building leads. They need to, you know, keep building those leads, but McDavid really hasn't gone off yet. Draisaitl has. He's got 5 points in the two games. That alarms me if I'm the Kings, that McDavid's played pretty well and he hasn't gone off yet. He's only got the one assist to pass the Draisaitl for the one timer last night. I think McDavid might, you know, go off in LA and they're coming back up 3-1.
Or LA sitting on the plane last night saying, we're playing pretty good. We think we figured this out. Like, you talk about no deference, right? And Matthew Tkachuk. How about Drew Doughty? There is no deference in this room. I don't think they're sitting there saying, oh my God, Connor McDavid's going to get 10 points. We're screwed. Like, the dam's going to burst at some point and we're just going to get run over. The avalanche is going to bury us and we're just looking at it and waiting for that trip moment. Like, they're sitting there and they're saying, we've played 120 minutes of hockey against these guys and we've given up 5 goals. We can't score. And we've come back to tie games after we've been down 2-0. We're going home and we get the matchups we want. Like, if I was the LA Kings, I would be sky high. I would not be shaking in my skates waiting for disaster. Which of the 16 teams in this league that made the playoffs would think like that?
They're not shaking.
Oh my God.
Streets.
He's coming. The big bad boogeyman's going to get us. He's going to score 15 points. We're screwed. You know what? Let's not go to Vegas. Let's not go to LA. Let's just come back here and we'll play game five. We'll just give them 3 and 4 and we'll say that Connor McDavid scored 10 points and we'll play game five as an elimination game. And we'll just, that's it, because he's going to come. He's the MVP of the league. His points are coming. We can't stop him. This is silly. What are we doing? The magic's over.
I'm not saying that they're shaking in their boots. I'm saying
they know it's coming.
They know it's coming. And can they win when it comes? Because it's coming.
They don't know it's coming. They believe that they can stop it from coming.
Well, they have so far. They've done a good job. He is still, every single time he's touched a puck in this series that I've been watching, he's a dangerous. It's dangerous. Every single time he touches the puck. And I'm just looking at the numbers, man. I'm just running the numbers. I'm looking at them. I'm saying, he's got a 4-point game coming. He does.
It's a double-edged sword, Dan. You say it's coming, and you say that the Kings should be worried that it's coming. What about in that Edmonton room? We're 120 minutes in. Our best player, our all-world player, our Wayne Gretzky, our player who's done things that nobody else has done in the history of hockey other than two players, has 1 point.
They're saying it's coming. That's what they're saying. It feels real good knowing that they're 1-1 in a series and their best player has 1 point. Now, Draisaitl's been terrific. That's all right. And he's obviously a terrific player, but that's what they're saying. They're saying what I'm saying right now. Like, we're 1-1. All right. We don't want to be 1-1. We'd rather be 2-0, but we're 1-1. We came back after losing game one. We were strong. We did blow a lead again in game two, but we came back. We won that game. And here we go. Our best player's got 1 point. We're 1-1. We're in a great spot. We're going to LA. This guy's going to go off. We're coming back up 3-1. Easy peasy. That's what the feeling has to be in the Edmonton Oilers room going, you know what, guys, we haven't done our thing yet. And we're sitting here. We're in a good spot. We're 1-1. We're in a decent spot. and they think they can hold us down. They think they can keep us down the way for an entire series. They're crazy. Here we go. We're taking it to them right now. We've seen this team. We know what we're up against. We're going to take it to them, and we're going back up 3-1.
And then he doesn't score in game three.
Well, then
and
there's trouble.
And he's gone three games with 1 point. And you don't think that the narrative changes?
Well, that's why they play the games. Come on. Of course the narrative changes.
That is why they play the games. But to suggest that there's a 10-point correction coming and to just dismiss what LA has done to counter that, right? He should have 5 points right now, like Dreisaitl. Run the numbers. He's a 2 point a game player almost, right? They play two games, 4 points, right? And you know, one of them should be a goal, and 60 plus goals. He scores almost every other game, if not more. So run the number. You can run the numbers any way you want. All I know is Drew Doughty sitting there after two games and saying, I'm in his head.
I don't think so.
Screw this guy. Like, I'm shutting him down. We're shutting him down. He's going to start thinking about it. Like, if you're Connor McDavid, you have to be thinking about it. I'm not scoring.
I don't think he's thinking about anything like that yet. If it goes one more game, maybe he starts thinking about it, but it's not that one more game. And I think the market correction is coming. So we'll see. That's why they play the games, right? We'll see. You know, I mean, I don't think anybody's getting 5 points in the Carolina Islanders series in a game. Maybe somebody does. Maybe it happens. I mean, they did score 7 last night in that game, but we haven't talked about that one yet, so let's get there, right? Carolina wins 2-1 in game one, 4-3 in overtime in game two. I picked the Islanders in the series. I did. I didn't love the way the Hurricanes finished the season. I didn't love the way the Islanders finished the season either, but the injuries, the lack of scoring, the issue, the questions in goal, there was a lot to question and wonder about with the Hurricanes. But look, they've come out and they've done what they had to do to win the first two games in this series. And, you know, they get an unlikely goal from Jacob Slavin after the Islanders score 3 in a row, Barzal late in the second period to tie it. They go up 3-2 on Brock Nelson's goal in the third period. And it's an unlikely goal that Ilya Sorokin does not give up very often. And Jacob Slavin doesn't score very often, and it ties it up. And then they catch a break in overtime. They did. They catch a break in overtime, right? I mean, you see it, you know, Scott Mayfield, there was a high stick. It went uncalled. That happens. Okay, you move on. But they couldn't because Jesper Fast scored about 3 seconds later. You got to catch a break every once in a while, too. They did there, but they didn't catch a break with Teuvo Teravainen, who Rod Brendamore was talking about, you know, slashed right on the hands, and he's out. So now they're without Pacioretty, which we knew about already, Svechnikov, which we knew about already, and Teravainen, who was playing on their top line with Aho and Seth Jarvis. So they're up 2-0, but they're getting, you know, this isn't going to be easy. I mean, this gets even a little harder for the Hurricanes, but can't argue with what getting the job done.
No, and they're that team, like you talk about who Florida can be after what they've gone through. Like, the Hurricanes are already there. They've been through all the disappointments. They've been through all the wars already. Like, they know what it takes, right? And they look, their forwards are decimated, but their defense is all world at generating offense, right? You look at what Brent Burns is doing. He's basically a forward. It just lines up as a defenseman.
He's been so big for them, that addition.
Oh my God.
Back end. Huge.
And you look at them and you watch the games and you just take snapshots and you're like, okay, they're in the attacking end, and there's Man Mountain, Brent Burns, behind the net. And there's Jacob Slavin on the goal line. That's your two defensemen. Like, what are they doing? Like, this picture's backwards. And if you're the New York Islanders and you have a game plan and how you're going to play defensively, how do you account for that? How do you account for my guy's supposed to be over here and he's over here? And the other guy, like, these are completely non-conventional rules when it comes to defensemen and how you cover in your zone and what your responsibilities are. And they make a really good defensive team look confused at times because they play so loose and with such disregard for conventional attacking hockey that yeah, their forward depth is concerning, but I think it's countered somewhat by the free-flowing defense that they have that just jumps into the play all the time and keeps things as an odd man. I think a better team, you know, could exploit some of the offensive issues that Carolina has. But I honestly believe Carolina could win one-goal games throughout this series. They're just mentally that much better.
They're a better one-goal team than the Islanders are. Yeah, that's what they are. And
the Islanders want to play. So yeah. Carolina is better at the game the Islanders want to play. Like the Islanders can play a perfect game and play a 2-1 game, and they're going to lose.
Yeah. Well, and they did in game one. And they didn't play perfect, obviously. Their power play was not good. It was 0-4. Then I don't think they got a shot on goal on their last three power play opportunities in game one. They didn't have a power play opportunity in game two. The Hurricanes had 6. So, I mean, there's obviously a difference there. You know, hindsight being what it is, it would have been very, like, I'm looking about my predictions. It'd be very easy, obviously, to pick the Hurricanes in this series, but I didn't like the way they were trending going into the playoffs. And that was a concern for me. But when you really, you know, when you break it down for what we've seen, the Hurricanes are, they're a better 2-1 team than the New York Islanders are. They just are. But it wouldn't shock me if the Islanders won 2 games at UBS Arena. Because this is another blow. Teravainen is an important player for this team. And yes, they can plug and play somebody else, but it's another bit of offense, another scoring chance that comes out of the lineup for the Hurricanes, who are already lacking in that department with their forward group. Meanwhile, the Islanders, Matthew Barzal got a goal. He's back playing. He's feeling a little bit better now after missing a lot of the last part of the season. He's in the lineup. He scored a goal. He's probably feeling pretty good now about his offensive game coming around. They're going home. So then maybe the Islanders get a little bit of, an advantage or a little bit of extra energy from that, whereas it's a little bit of a takeaway from the Hurricanes. I'm not saying Teravainen is, you know, as impactful offensively as, say, a Brent Burns or a Sebastian Aho, but he's really good. And that might be enough to just turn the table a little bit to make a 2-1 or a 3-2 game go in favor of the Islanders. And I could see them winning 2 of those at UBS to go back to Carolina. Remember, Carolina last year, they were dominant at home until game 7 against the Rangers. They couldn't win on the road.
I saw this series going 6 or 7 at 2-0. I'm not like, oh my God, let's just pencil Carolina into the next round. There's no writing off of the New York Islanders. I know our loyal listeners and our loyal followers of the Super 16 think I'm completely anti-New York Islander, and my Twitter blows up on a regular basis because of it. I think you just accept who you are as a team, you know, and you don't like the way that Carolina played going down the stretch. You know what? Playing 2-1 hockey is really hard. When you don't have anything to play for, why expend that energy, right?
Yeah.
Like, they had positioning to play for, but it didn't really matter. I mean, 1-7. Now Florida's proven it, 1-8. There's not a whole lot of difference in the matchups. Like, oh, I get to draw New York Islanders instead of the New Jersey Devils. Like, is that a difference? No. Like, so they had nothing to play for. And I think you're human when you don't want to expend that energy and say, you know what? I got to work really hard to make this a 2-1 victory for us. I'm not going to go into that corner. I'm going to save myself. You know, the important games are coming up. So I think when you play that way and you know how to play that way, you can flip a switch. And I think that's what Carolina has done here, is they've flipped the switch and everybody's willing to pay that price now. You know, with the Winnipeg Jets, their big slogan, everybody, I love it. The thing I love about the playoffs is people think for days and days, what's our slogan going to be, right? Like, Florida Panthers are the lead dogs because they're the underdogs. So they're not the underdogs. They're the lead dogs. For the Winnipeg Jets, it's every shift matters. That's the Carolina Hurricanes. For the Carolina Hurricanes, every shift matters. And I don't think down the stretch they subscribe to every shift matters. They took some shifts off. And they had to for the condition they were in and what their game demands. But now it's every shift matters. And I think everybody in that room looks at Rod Brind'Amour and listens to what he says and understands every shift matters. And that's the way that they've played.
Like the Tampa Bay Lightning, right? I mean, they didn't closed the regular season very strong. And look, their game, you may be listening to this when their game is going on or right before their game two is going on, but they didn't play very well down the stretch. They go into Toronto and they win 7-3 in game one. They flip the switch. That's what good teams do. They're capable of doing that, right? Carolina is in that way as well. I worry a little bit more about Carolina's offense, but I mean, quickly before we get out of here, Sean, like Tampa Bay, Toronto, which we haven't touched on. I think things are exploding in Toronto. There's complete chaos going on in Toronto. People are throwing things out of buildings and no, I hope not because it's one game. I shocked that the talk of the Alex Lyon thing with Sergei Bobrovsky makes more sense to me than Joe Wall and Ilya Samsonov. Okay. And Ilya Samsonov had a tough game one. That there was even a question, like, how could they even consider going to Joe Wall in game two? Right. I mean, you got to go back to Samsonov. You got to believe in him a little bit, right?
What is there to believe in? You got him. He's your goalie because another team that had Stanley Cup aspirations looked at their goaltending and said,
I know. I get it.
I got no use for this cat and I got no use for the other cat. Right. And one goes to New Jersey and gives up what, 5 in game one, right? Yeah. And didn't look great. And the other one goes to Toronto and is just lit up, right? To the point where he said he played like fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. This is a family podcast, so I'm not going to fill in the blank, but I think you can fill in the blank. There's a little Mad Lib here. I played like blank, and he did.
Yeah.
And there has to be concern, but there has to be more concern than that. I have never seen a hockey team just keep doing the same dumb things in the playoffs that the Toronto Maple Leafs do, right? They start slow.
Zero energy.
You know, last year the narrative was, well, we got a lot more respect in the handshake line. But where is that now? Like, what is that translating?
What does that get you? Like, what does it get you?
But even if that's the case, like, Tampa didn't play afraid. Tampa wasn't like, oh my God, these guys are going to come out like a house on fire and we better batten down the hatches and let me think of what other sayings I can use. But they didn't. They're like, where did the Stanley Cup finalists? We've won 2 cups. We know who we are. Let's see Toronto's best. And then they didn't. Like, I was watching that game while I was having dinner at the Vegas game. And I looked up and it was 3-0 in the first period. And you're like, oh my God.
Yeah, I know.
Like, here we go again.
Here we go. Well,
and then, right, you run Nazem Kadri out of town because he's costing you every year in the playoffs. As good as a player as he is, he's costing you every year in the playoffs. He goes somewhere and he wins the cup the next year. Now you're like, hey, we don't have that problem anymore. We're not going to have important guys suspended for big games. Oops. Michael Bunting suspended for 3 games. That could be, I'm not saying it is, but that could be the rest of the series.
It could be the rest of the series, but I don't think it will be. Look, and John Cooper brought this up. The Leafs won 5-0 in game one last year against the Lightning. The Lightning came back and won the series. So one game, as much of a blowout as it was, makes a difference. Doesn't make that much of a difference. The difference is that the Tampa Bay Lightning can handle losing 5-0. I don't know that the Toronto Maple Leafs can handle losing 7-3 the way the Lightning handled losing 5-0. That's number one. Number two, you talk about Michael Bunting. Look, 3-game suspension, fully on board for that. I'm going to try to be very nice here. I have absolutely no clue what he was doing, right? No clue. If he takes a straight line to the puck, he doesn't even have to make contact with Eric Chernak, who's a much bigger man than he is. Why do you want to make contact with a much bigger man than you when the puck is right in front of you? Take a straight line to it. You can go get it. Instead, he does the reverse hit, raises up, gets him in the head. Bang, you're out 3 games. That's it made no sense to me in the moment. Like, I can't put myself in the moment. All right. These guys are there. They're in that moment. But watching it in fast motion and in slow motion, None of it made sense to me.
It was message sending, Dan.
What kind of message are you sending?
There was messages being sent that it's going to be a hard series. Look, the Tampa Bay Lightning know who they are, right? They knew who they were last year. They knew they weren't a 5-0 losing team.
Right.
And they looked at the end of their bench and they said, we have the best goalie in the world. He will be better. Do you think that the Toronto Maple Leafs are sitting in their locker room right now? As we're doing this, they're morning skating. Do you think that they're sitting in their locker room right now and they're looking at their goaltender and they're saying, we've got the better goaltender in this series. He's coming back. He is going to shut this team down. I couldn't be more confident about this if I tried.
Well, no, of course they're not. But imagine if they switched goalies after one game. How would they be thinking then? They'd be like, what in the world is going on here? What are we doing here? So listen, we'll see where it goes. Okay. It's game two. It happens tonight, Thursday night. Everything is not broken in Toronto. We'll see how this series plays out. We talk next week. We'll obviously have a much bigger picture of where this series is, if it's still going or not. And we'll know a heck of a lot more. So let's everybody just relax and see what happens. But look, before we get out of here, quickly, Seattle Kraken. You've been, and the Colorado Avalanche. You've been on the Avalanche's bandwagon all year long. You were ranking them in our Super 16 in the top four when they weren't even in a playoff position, right? And I don't think there was too much of an argument from my side on that, but you know, maybe a little too high at the time, but they obviously proved you right in the way they were in the regular season. Any concern with how they played in game one against Seattle? Or how about flip it around? Were you that much more impressed with Seattle in game one than maybe you thought you'd be?
Neither. I think this was going to be a 6-game series at least. Look, Seattle's playing with house money. There's nothing to concern them. They could lose. Well, they can't now, but they could have been swept. And it's a good season. Like, they're in the playoffs. They get to, you know, experience that. And it would stink, you know, for that to happen. But it is what it is. You're playing the defending Stanley Cup champions. I mean, all the excuses were there. So they're playing with house money. I think Colorado's still trying to figure out who they are. You know, they know they're not going to have Landeskog now. I think they knew it for a long time, but the reality still hits. You know, McCarr's trying to find his way back after battling injuries down the stretch. I still think there's too much in that Colorado room mentally and skill-wise to even be slightly concerned. Obviously, if they go down 0-2 and they got to go into the Kraken building, which is just going to be an insane asylum in the best possible way, that's a different story. But I don't see that happening. Look, the two teams I'm really worried about are the New Jersey Devils. I did not like anything about their game.
Right.
Nothing. They just seemed out of their element, and New York played a much better game than I thought they were capable of. We had this conversation in the last podcast before the playoffs started. I didn't think that the Rangers could handle the Devil's speed, and they did. They just ground them into neutral. Mm-hmm. You know, they the Devils didn't get a ton of chances. Vanacek wasn't very good. So they need to be far different for game two, or this goes really quickly. And I'm nervous about Vegas after watching game one. I think they're a team that's going to correct, but I think Winnipeg is a much better team than anybody gave them credit for. I think they've been playing playoff hockey for a month now, and they finally figured out who they are and what they are. And in game one, they got all their big guns going at the same time, which hasn't happened since January. You know, guys have been benched. Bones has called guys out. You know, and I could see them walking away 2-0 here, and then, you know, going into the whiteout and it being a far different thing. And let me just say, like, every year when you cover the playoffs, you get to see something that amazes you and will stay with you for a long time. Morgan Barron.
Oh, my goodness.
Is an unbelievable study in perseverance.
That is crazy. It is insane.
So for anybody that's lived under a rock and hasn't seen it, Morgan Barron, first of all, it was one of the craziest plays I've ever seen. Winnipeg should have scored. That guy had an open net. He comes around the side and he tries to stick it in, and there's a thicket of bodies, and somehow the puck doesn't go in, and it's floating around the crease, and there's five guys laying in the crease, and one of them's not the goalie. Somehow he's wandered out away, but he sees that the puck's still not in. He decides he's going to pig pile, Superman dive on a pig pile to get the puck off the goal line. And as he does, Chandler Stephenson is wrestling with Morgan Barron and kind of puts Morgan Barron in a bad place where the goalie's skate gets under his visor and cuts him. I mean, look, it was a freak accident. So he goes to the room. They lose count of how many stitches he needs. Somebody thought he got 15 and they were proved wrong. The coach thought he got 50. He was wrong. The TV reported he got 75. The player doesn't know. They lost count, right? He's gone for an hour. He's on the table. He's texted his girlfriend. He's texted his wife. I mean,
girlfriend
his
and his wife.
He's, yeah, that would have been nice. He texted his girlfriend and he texted his mom and, you know, hey, I'm okay. He's on the table. He hears them score two goals. He wants to come back. He comes back. His teammate, Adam Lowry, says, you look like you got attacked by a shark.
By a shark.
Yeah. His first shift back wearing a full shield, 75 plus stitches in his forehead. He goes behind the net and runs into somebody. And you could just see him recoil. Like, the pain had to be unbelievable. He played on the penalty kill. He played an important part. He inspired that team, right? And we see that every year. I'm curious how effective he's going to be tonight in game two. That's a lot of pain right there. So we'll see. But it's just every year something like that happens that just humbles you, where you understand what the playoffs are about. To come back from that and to fight to come back from that and to tell people, hey, just fix me up. I need to get back out there. Like, it's inhuman. Like, you shouldn't do that. Like, it's time for a week's rest. It's awe-inspiring. And that's what this tournament means. And we're going to see a ton more of it, even by the time we reconvene next week.
Yeah. No, and we'll know a heck of a lot more by the time we reconvene. You brought up the Devils' concern. Absolutely. We'll see how they respond in game two. Same with Vegas. I like Winnipeg. The way they played in game one, I think Vegas has a big response coming. The difference is there's no question in my mind in that series that the Winnipeg Jets have the best goalie in the series. And there's no question in my mind that in the Rangers-Devils series that the Rangers have the best goalie. And it was proven in both areas. You know, in game one, we'll see where it goes. Same with Toronto. We'll see where that one goes. The Toronto Maple Leafs, obviously, and the Tampa Bay Lightning. There's a lot of hockey coming up. We're going to have much more of a bigger picture when we reconvene for this podcast next week. But until then, enjoy it. Enjoy the playoffs.